The next one is going to be Graham Hackman is going to be talking about the F1 Williams team. He's not talking about the team. He's actually the CIO for the F1 Williams team. And he's got some really good stuff about strategic partners and working with partners and being successful, that sort of stuff. Now, the question for him for that particular session is, what was the first data capture device Williams used as part of their program? What was the first data capture device that Williams used? Don't forget, hashtag TechNetVC, hashtag contest, and you have to be following MS_ITPro to be able to try to win one of those drones or phones that's up there. So, hey, Naz, go ahead and roll the next one, would you, Graham?
Hi, I'm Graham Hackland, IT Director at Williams Grand Prix Engineering. I'm really looking forward to sharing with you some of our challenges. I think you might find they're similar to the ones that you face. And while we're here in the world's largest privately held Formula One car collection, I thought I'd show you some of my favorite cars. Success in a Formula One context is actually quite easy. Behind me, I have my favorite Formula One car, Nigel Mansell's 1992 championship winning car. So success for a Formula One team is about trying to win world championships, getting to the front of the grid. And I joined Williams in order to help the team to do that again, to get Williams back to the front of the grid, to enjoy the kind of success that the team had through many years, through the 70s, 80s and 90s. And we want to do that again. So success for us is about focus, being focused on car performance, where we spend our money, where we put our resources, where we put our people's time and effort, is really focused on how to make that car quick. And at Williams, we also have an advanced engineering division, and they exist to help us generate more income. And that income is then fed into Formula One to help us be more successful in Formula One. So I find, and the reason I've been in Formula One for 19 seasons now, is that narrow focus really keeps us involved, keeps even the IT professionals really engaged in what we do. We can see a direct correlation between our efforts and the work that we do and car performance and what we do on a weekend. Every 2 weekends we're out there racing against the other teams, and it's that narrow focus on success for the company and seeing our contribution to it that keeps us engaged. Coping with the change, every season all the rules change, the cars change completely, and we're expected to innovate and change the IT systems as well in order to contribute to that success. So this car is Adrian Newey's first Williams car that he worked on in 1991, and another special car in our collection. Looking at people and skills, and Adrian was, you know, and still is one of the most skilled people in Formula One, but from an IT perspective, looking at the skills that we need, everywhere you look, whether you're talking to analysts or journalists or other CIOs, everyone talks about this skills shortage in IT as being a really big problem. And I wondered, well, how big a problem is it, actually? And I think there are some technical areas where there are very few skills. If you go for some of the deep technology that's quite limited in the number of people you can get, it can be really difficult to bring people in. And we've experienced that from time to time. I think on the whole, every position that we advertise, we get over 100 CVs. So the difficulty is not getting people to apply, it's then filtering them and working out, what do we need? What are the kind of people that we need to work for us? And the things that I look for straight off are the relevant skills, obviously, that they can do the role that we need. But also, do I believe that we can train them? Often you can't tell that from a CV. So a nicely formatted CV that reads well and the first paragraph is interesting usually gives you a better opportunity of coming in and meeting with us. And then once you start to look at the people and meet with them and talk to them, it's less about technical skills then, because you can train those. You can bring people up to speed with your own systems and how you do things. It really becomes more about personality. Is this the kind of person who can cope in our environment, who can work in a very hectic, a very busy, a very fast-paced environment where we are putting new technologies in? I find the biggest skill shortage, and I'm interested when I talk to other CIOs if it's the same for them, I find the biggest skills shortage around the new technologies as we move from big data centers that we've traditionally built servers and plugged them in and switched them on, and we know how to keep them running. As we've moved to cloud computing and building solutions that are running in cloud systems now, you need a different skill set. Have I got the right kind of people who are willing to retrain and move into these new technologies? And the great thing that I found coming into Williams is that I have a group of people who really want to learn, who want to put new technology in, and who want to be part of that journey. And that's been brilliant. It's been brilliant to see them as we've gone through replacing some of the infrastructure and technology that we have, as we've started to embrace cloud technologies, bringing in more social applications, getting really close to the car, getting really close to being part of the critical performance of a Formula One car. It gets really exciting then, and having the right temperament of person, the right kind of person, that's what you need. Someone who at the track is having to deal with engineers who are up in arms because they need a system, they need some data right now, and they may be shouting at you, and having the temperament to just deal with that without getting upset yourself is really important. Having the people back here in base who can help with the design, development, manufacturing of a Formula One car. And I, as I talk to CIOs as I go around, they all face these similar issues. You can find people with technical skills. It's getting that right temperament of person who will make your team better. This is Damon Hill's 1996 championship winning car. He drove it this year again for the first time since then. And he still loves the car, and it's still one of my favorites in the collection as well. Being seen as strategic in your organization is a really interesting one. I'm privileged to talk to a lot of CIOs. I belong to a sporting CIO roundtable, and I talk to a lot of CIOs as I go around the world, sharing what we do as a team. And many of them will say, I don't have a seat at the table. I don't get to be part of the executive. We're seen as a support function. And I think that was probably true in Formula One too. And it's just as difficult in Formula One to get a seat at the table, because 85 to 95% of the people who work for the company think they know more than you do about technology. And most of them do. It's a very highly technical workforce. So the challenge for me is not to try and prove that I know everything. I don't. And it's to rephrase everything in business challenges. We're very focused on what makes the car quicker. We're very focused on the business challenges. And I say to other CIOs, find your thing that's equivalent to what makes the car quicker. What is your focus as a company, and tie yourself to that and make sure that you're contributing in that way. I don't think we have a divine right to be at the table as IT professionals, as an IT leaders. I think we have to prove ourselves. We have to prove we're worth it. We have to show that we have talents beyond just the technology, beyond all those three-letter acronyms that we use. If we're not talking in business language, in language that they can understand, every time you have to explain something to one of your peers, you've failed. We've really got to make sure that we're talking a language that they can understand, and that we're addressing their business needs. We've lost control. Forget about trying to control everything and put it in a data center and lock it down. The people who talk to me about having lost control and divisions are off buying their own IT, we haven't lost the battle yet, but you've got to re-engage with them, and you've got to be seen as that trusted advisor who will ensure that data loss prevention is in place, that you're secure, that you're providing systems that are robust, that are not reliant on one vendor who may disappear at some point in the future. All the things that we were good at when we built on-premise data center-based services still apply in the cloud. So there's no point someone with a credit card going off and buying services that well then at some point in the future really hurt your company when something happens to that vendor, or the vendor lock you in, or the price escalates. So I think we still have a role to play without trying to control everything. So that place at the table, on the board, in the executive is there for us, but we have to prove that we're worthy. We're not just going to get put onto the table. Jacques Villeneuve's 1997 championship winning car, actually the last championship that this team won. It's still got the damage from Michael Schumacher driving into Villeneuve as it sits here in our car collection. And we've started to put in place the partnerships that we think will get us back to the front of the grid. We've seen real success over the last two seasons getting us back onto the podium. But it's really that final step of being able to challenge for race wins, challenge for championships that we're after. And we simply won't be able to do it without the partnerships that we've been setting up. It's a really critical part of a team of our size, spending a third of the money of some of the bigger teams. The way that we can challenge them, the way that we can catch up to them, is by partners coming and working with us, by buying into that vision of getting Williams back to the front of the grid. Seeing Sir Frank's face when we win again is what we all want to do. And it's been fantastic for Williams over the last couple of years, bringing companies like BT and Avanade into our portfolio of partners to help us to deliver technology that is getting data from the car to engineers all over the world, including back here in the UK, in real time as it's generated by the car. Technology that just wasn't here for this team, probably in its history. For the first time, we're able to get that data as it's generated back. Working with Avanade, we're building new technologies, digital technologies, that we're not having to follow the other teams. We want to jump ahead of them. We want to beat our competitors. We're putting in new digital technology that will help us to do that. Whether it's at the track where we're building new applications or in the factory where we want to help with designing the car, developing the car, manufacturing the car, shortening the whole design cycle, has been a real focus for us in some of the partnerships and security side of it as well, making sure that we're doing a really good job of making sure that Williams data and our customer data for advanced engineering is secure. We know where it is, whether it's at rest or in motion. So the partnerships are absolutely critical. But I think it goes more than just partnering with a Formula One team and aligning your brands together. We've seen some great things happen there. It helps to raise the profile of Williams with technology companies that we are a modern company that are looking to adopt new technologies to help us win. And that really translates well to the rest of their customers who also want to embrace new technologies that will help them to win in their businesses. So it's been great for us to see these partners come in, work with us, really apply their best people to helping us to make our car quicker, to make the whole manufacturing process quicker. Without the partners, we simply wouldn't be able to do what we're doing. Avanade have helped us to implement SharePoint, and we've put Office 365 in to help our people with collaboration and being able to access their information wherever they are in the world seamlessly but securely, and that's been really important for us. So partners are critical to our success. We simply couldn't do it without them. The car immediately behind me, Keke Rosberg's 1982 championship winning car, and just behind that, 1980 Alan Jones, the first world championship for Williams. Having set the team up in 1977, Sir Frank Williams and Sir Patrick Head saw success fairly quickly, and even in those days, data was really important to them. Even if some of that data was generated by a stopwatch on a pit wall, it's always been the case in Formula One that you needed to analyze what you're doing now to make sure that you learn the good and the bad, that you can improve, you learn from your competitors, and you learn how to be better. And Williams were really good at that in those early days and were able to win their first world championship within only a few years of establishing the team. And all through the collection that we've seen and all the success, data has been really key to this team. I came into Formula One in 1997. The data from a Formula One car fitted on a floppy disk back then. We can generate car data, 60 to 80 gig per race, and being able to move that around the world, getting it to the right person at the right time so that decisions can be made in order to get you to that podium, hopefully to the race win or the world championship. The focus is on how you use that data. For our advanced engineering division, it's about growing the business, it's about winning projects, it's about using the data that we have in Formula One and the knowledge and know-how and applying it to other industries and other technologies and helping to improve those in renewable energies and so on. So data has always been really important, and it's not so much for us especially about big data, it's about complexity, it's about fast data, getting the data in real time from where it needs to be to who needs to consume it, no matter where they are. And that's a challenge that I hear a lot of CIOs talking about. They face the same challenges as we do. no matter what their industry is. You hear this concept now that data is the new oil. It's about the value. Data is extremely valuable, but it's only valuable as long as you know the life of it and where it is, and that you've secured it and that it hasn't been tampered with. We know within our life cycle of our Formula One car how valuable that data is, but for what period? Some of our data is only valuable for one season, and then it's of no use to anyone after that. So having that management of your data and understanding the consumer, the generator of that data, understanding how they use it and where they need it is really, really important. So data, right from back in the 80s and the late 70s, from the establishment of Williams as a Formula One team, all through the generations of cars that we've seen, data has been absolutely critical to the success of this team. In 1987, Nelson Piquet won both Driver and Constructors Championships with Williams. Formula One is known for innovation. It's all about innovation. And even here we are in the late 80s, and it's all about that constant need to improve and innovate and learn lessons from what's gone before. And we're still doing that now. We're still learning from everything that happens to us across the whole life cycle of the Formula One car. Within IT, everything that we do, we're evaluating, we're looking at our whole program, our internal processes, how we operate, and we're looking at how we can improve constantly. What technology should we be tracking over the next 5 years? I recently presented to our board 5 technologies that I think we should be looking to track. We can either use our advanced engineering division to make money out of them, or we can use them to help in Formula One. There's some obvious things like 3D printing, which again has been in Formula One since the late 90s with some of the technologies that we've been using. We're now tracking things like artificial intelligence, machine-to-machine learning, and the robotics that's going on right now. A real area of interest for me is wearable technology. I think that the car is fully instrumented, so we got 200 to 300 sensors on a car, 1,000 channels of data. We're moving that data around the world. We're using it to make decisions, but we don't instrument the humans. We're not tracking the driver. We're not tracking the pit crew. And I think we could be looking at wearable technologies to help us improve our pit stops in the future. Are you positioned in quite the right place as you're about to put a tire onto the car in real time, using real time positioning of the car? So the driver is slightly off where they're supposed to be, slightly off center, and you need to move. At the moment, they only discover that at the point that the car stops. Can we use wearable technology to give them an audible signal to tell them that they've got to move slightly in order to compensate for the car not being in quite the right place? But I can see wearable technology being used across the piece, and some of the machine-to-machine learning here within our factory to help us with the manufacturing of the car. Very often we're doing just-in-time manufacturing to the extreme. Designers are redesigning and working on designs constantly, and we're manufacturing them, and we're trying to work out which race is the right one to take parts to. What if the machines were connected to the design system so that we knew a designer was updating a design for a part that's just about to be manufactured, and the machine could make that decision to pause and wait and see if the designer up-issues it. And I think there's a lot of power in using the smart technology that's coming from sensors. A Formula One car has been highly instrumented and had sensors in it for decades. We can use what we know in all sorts of other areas. Our advanced engineering division is using that information for some of our client projects, for some of the road cars that we're working on, and for lots of other interesting projects that we work on for other motorsports and other companies around the world with renewable energy, for example. And we want to see this constant innovation being used, not just in Formula One to help make our car quicker, but how can we use it to help the rest of the world in some of the really innovative things we're doing with our advanced engineering group? And that's a challenge to IT too, to constantly innovate. How do you keep up to date with what's going on? How do you make sure you're tracking the right technologies? And I really focus on some of the social channels to make sure that I'm tracking the right innovations and technology that are out there that could benefit us. And so either being a social CIO, making comments about the things I see, or learning from others who are making the comments about the technology that they're using, that's really powerful for us. So being connected and being a social CIO does make you a better CIO in the sense that you will have more information about what's going on and that you can innovate. Because if you don't innovate, you're going to get left behind. And we know that in Formula One. I've enjoyed sharing with you some of the challenges we face here at Williams. I hope the information's been useful, and I hope you've enjoyed having a look around the Williams Formula One car collection.
Wow. High octane, fast, speed, all sorts of really, really cool stuff for sure. In case you're joining us again, back live, we are back in the Channel 9 studios. This is Rickster CDN, or Rick Claus, joined by Mary Jo Foley. We happen to have a question. I believe we had enough people come back with the answer, but the question was originally with Graham Hackman, the CIO of F1 team Williams. What was the question?
Oh, yeah. The question was, what was the first data capture device that Williams used?
Interesting. You know what? To answer that question, why don't we actually bring Mr. Hackman in himself. Graham, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hi, Mary Jo. Hi, Rick.
Hello. Hey,
good to see you. So what was the first data capture device that Williams F1 Racing used, and when was it used?
So when the team was set up in the late 70s, Sir Frank Williams used to stand on the pit wall with a stopwatch and time the drivers going around lap by lap. So it was that crude, I'm afraid.
And I'm assuming they probably had a carbon archive device, otherwise known as a piece of paper and a pencil, to be able to record the times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we've come a long way in that time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for joining us from across the pond. We apologize. I believe it's about 2 o'clock in the morning or something over there, time difference wise.
Is it?
we're keeping him from his dinner.
Oh,
I wouldn't look this good. It's early evening, so no problem at all. I'm usually working now anyway.
Okay, so we're holding you up from being able to head home and have a pint or something. But speaking of pints, Mary Jo has the first question for you, actually.
Hey, if you're okay with it. Nice segue on that.
I'm trying.
So, Graham, we're getting a lot of questions from Twitter and through the stream for you already, but given that you talked a lot about changes that are happening, not just within IT departments, but even higher up at the CIO level, we're wondering what kind of skill shortages are you seeing, and what kinds of positions are you looking for in your organization and maybe across the whole IT industry? What do you think people should be really specializing in, differentiating themselves, doing? Any preferences there?
So that sounds like people that are tweeting because they're interested in a job with Williams, which is great because one of the benefits of working in a Formula One team is that people really want to be here and are interested in what we do. So we never have a problem when we advertise for a role. We never have a shortage of candidates, which is great, right? Mm-hmm. I think some of my contemporaries that I talk to will tell you that sometimes they do struggle to even get CVs through the door. We don't struggle with that. I think the skill shortage is something that is talked about by everyone. Every CIO who's looking at any of the surveys that are done, any of the recruitment agency surveys, they're always very good, always talk about the skills shortage. And I think it is true that in some of the deeply specialist technologies, it can be difficult to recruit people. And I think you're then in a market, and Williams are probably not in the market of hiring the top people for the most money. We're just not a team that are able to fund that level of recruitment. So we will often grow our own. We will train people, we'll bring in graduates. I think a lot of the skills shortage, when I talk to my peers, comes from this evolving world that we live in, this move from on-premise to hybrid to cloud, for example, and the new and emerging technologies and the new skills that are needed for the data analytics challenges that we're all facing. That's where it seems to me there's this so-called skills shortage. Now, if you've got the right people in your team, they're trainable. I always look for the right personality, the right kind of person who wants to come and work for us and who'll be at work late evening doing this kind of thing. Those are the people that you want, the people with the right temperament, the right personality who fit into your work ethic. Then you can train the technologies as they're changing.
That's actually a really good point. I like that for being able to find the right fit for the team. I know that part of the hiring process that I went through for Microsoft years ago, a lot of the interviews, besides being technical, also were really about how I could work with different team members and different virtual teams as well. So it's actually a very, very good point there, Graham. How about Mike here online has a question for us. This is one specifically for you, Graham, but you mentioned you joined Williams about 20-odd years ago. If my memory serves me correctly, that's going to be just around the Windows 95, before the Windows 95 time frame. What was the first step that you took towards working with different Microsoft technologies?
So I started with another Formula One team, actually, back in 1997. Been with Williams 2 years, just over 2 years. The first Microsoft technologies I worked with actually was Novell.
Oh, nice.
I was a Novell guy in my early days. Not sure I'm allowed to say that in this forum, but there you go. And that's where I started out life. So certainly for me, Windows 95, DOS, running these applications of top. I remember running an application on top of DOS that allowed you to run two applications at once. You know, I remember the days when you could only do one thing at a time on a computer. Mm-hmm. So I go back a bit.
Nice. You don't have to date yourself with having to go back into the Novell side of things. My first foray into technology was actually Banyan Vines.
Oh, wow.
Well, yes, I remember it.
Yeah, lots of fun there.
You and Jim Alch.
Jim Alch. Sardan, Stevic actually has a question here from online. Is what is the benefit regarding price after you switch to your on-premises infrastructure to Office 365? I'm going to slightly modify that one and say, can you talk a little bit about the challenges that your team faced and how they overcame them doing that on-premises switch over to an Office 365 environment?
Okay, I do want to touch on the price question because I think it is a mistake actually to look at cloud from a price perspective. So I think it's worth just touching on.
Okay,
a lot of the CIOs I talk to, I belong to various forums, are looking at a business benefit around price for the move to cloud, and I don't see it. I think the reason we went to cloud was not because we were going to save a load of money. So we were at the point of migrating from a mail system that we were using that we didn't feel was good enough for us, and we wanted to move to something new. And our choices were an on-premise solution, and we looked at a couple of cloud solutions, including Office 365, and we chose Office 365. Mm-hmm. But we made that decision on the flexibility that it offered us, the mobility challenge that we were trying to fix, we didn't feel was going to be fixed by an on-premise solution. And Office 365 gave us that flexibility of, because we travel the world. We got people who are in 21 races this year across the globe. Mm-hmm. And we wanted them to have that seamless experience no matter where they were. And that wasn't the case with the previous technology that we were using. So I tend to go to it from a capacity, performance, reliability, rather than cost when I'm looking at most of the cloud technologies that I'm looking at. So I just wanted to touch on the cost. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to repeat the other part of your question.
The second part of that question that I wanted to ask was more around how much of a difference and how much of a change was it for the day-to-day activities of your staff going from an on-premises hosted environment that you ran yourselves over to an O365 environment? Did they have a lot of challenges they had to overcome, and what did they do?
It was a big change for us because we weren't using an Outlook solution before. I'm not going to name what we weren't using something that was very well integrated with the Office suite or anything like that. So the step change that we made was huge because it gave people that opportunity to the things that you guys are used to using all the time. The difference between going on-premise, an on-premise Exchange or into Office 365, as I said, for us was around capacity, performance, flexibility, mobility, those kind of things, and that's why we decided to do that. And also partly, if I'm honest, we then don't have to do all the maintenance on the systems. Some of the systems that we have here at Williams, we've left alone for a long period of time and just not done much to them. One of the real benefits of going for cloud is you get that constant refresh and upgrade, and it's not consuming a lot of the very limited IT resource that I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's speaking of on-prem, we have a question from Glenn Strachan. He said, once we move everything to the cloud, how do I rationalize my on-premises network engineers? The CFO is looking to save through a RIF. Not good.
So there you go, right? Again, another classic, and I don't want to knock CFOs, but it tends to be that, okay, if we go for cloud, mm-hmm. how many IT people can we get rid of? Mm-hmm. And that's not a view that I'm supportive mm-hmm. of. Mm-hmm. I think you have a lot of IT folk who are wasting time that could be spent on innovation, keeping the lights on, running on-premise systems, patching, doing multiple test cycles before they can upgrade a system. Once you free up that time, and this is what we've done with the time that we've freed up from our infrastructure and support teams by moving some of our onto cloud solutions, we have given them a dedicated amount of time each month to put to innovation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can look at it from how many heads can we lose because we're moving to the cloud? But actually, the same questions that you have with an on-premise solution around security and how you maintain those systems, you still need that expertise. Just because it's in the cloud and you're not actually having to do the patching yourself, mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you're completely hands off and you never have to touch it. I think we've got a better amount of resource on our first line support, and we're able to free up creativity time for our people so that they can look at innovation. That's the advantage we've got from moving to some of these cloud solutions.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. We've got our next speaker. It's going to be coming up in just a moment, but I have one last question to ask you. Do the drivers get to read their mail on Office 365 while they're driving? I'm assuming they
the
don't.
The answer better be no.
So no, the drivers. So if you've ever seen the onboard camera of a Formula One car, and you look at the driver and the steering wheel that they're holding, those steering wheels have got about 54 different inputs that they can make per lap. They're having to not just changing gears, but they're having to make all sorts of changes, and the new energy recovery systems that we have in Formula One, the power unit and how they use that power and when they use it, yeah. and the changes they're making to the feel of the car and the braking through a corner. Yeah, they're really concentrating on driving the car.
So there's no browser interface that's in there as well that allows them to get to Outlook.com. So, okay, I got it. Makes sense. Thank you for being such... go ahead.
When you're on your Xbox, right, and you're doing one of the driving games, whichever one you like, how much do you like having people interrupting you, coming into the room, talking to you? It's similar, right?
Yeah. Definitely. Touche, my friend. Thank you very much. Thanks for being such a good sport and also taking time out of your day and your evening to come and join us. We really appreciate it.
Yes.
We're going to have to let you go because the next person that's going to be coming up here is, if I can do the proper key sequence to make this work, there
Tim
we go.
Raines.
Tim Raines.